I think that's the most important thing about parenting that I hope to take to my son is that if something's important to you, it's going to be important to me. And that's how you feel seen and supported, I think, and feel like you're able to follow your own path.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, Courtney, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You are the counterpart of our last interview, which is kind of exciting. So I don't know if we've ever had a father-daughter author combo on before.
I'm not sure, but Katie and Barrett Ersek will be a close
They were
father-daughter.
close,
Yeah,
yeah,
they
so
work
another
together
friend of ours,
too.
but definitely no more than one. So it was
And
definitely,
definitely not a book club, you
no,
know?
that's true.
Yeah.
He's a big act to follow, so
Oh,
he
that's
is.
so
He
sweet.
is very easy to draw you into his stories, that's for sure. So he definitely teaches in parables, which I think
Is
everyone
your
loves.
favorite, for sure.
Well, you've only heard those stories once when you live with him and he's on, it's on the fifth time,
I'm
it
sure.
wears off a little.
Yeah. We tell Jim's mom when she starts telling stories, I say, oh, I love this one, you
Or
know, or the reruns.
say, oh, I've seen this episode.
Yes,
I'll
that's what
always
it
say
is.
that for reruns, but
Yeah. The funniest thing is, my brother is like a clone of my dad. They're the same person. He went into the business and he now has adopted the stories. Even if they haven't happened to him, you'll hear him with his friends and everyone will be around him and he'll be telling the same story.
Oh, that's so
That's
funny.
so funny. That's
Yeah.
great. But you, and that's what I'd like to get into, because obviously your dad took a path of the business world, recruiting, and then you followed your own path into teaching. But you guys shared similar values, which is how you wrote the book. So I'd love to hear a little bit how you went a different way than the family
Well, and she
business.
didn't start as a teacher, if you recall.
No, you went into something you didn't enjoy.
A lawyer, right?
Well, I dabbled in it. My dad made me try it, but then I did ultimately start my career in teaching. So it's interesting. When I was in high school, I was one of my dad's interns, which is that program is the inspiration for the book. And we all tried his business at some point. There's four of us. And I am super motivated. I think I get that from my dad. We are really hard workers. And so I went in there and he used to do this phone log where the amount of minutes and calls you made would be recorded. And then at the end of the day, they would send this out to everyone, how many calls each person made, how long they were on the phone, you know, especially in an interpersonal business like that, you need those statistics. And he always jokes, I set a world record for number of calls. I had like 171, like in a day. I would go through my list and I was so driven. I wanted to do well at it, but I really hated it. And I remember my dad being like, no, you can do this. And I was, you know, super uncomfortable in that setting. I was uncomfortable sitting at a cubicle. I didn't want to talk to people who were CEOs of their companies. I felt like I didn't have the confidence to do that. I wasn't in that place. I didn't feel like it was for me, but I did feel like I needed to do something that was like that. Like I wanted to have that success and show that I could do it. And so I was really swayed to try to go into business just because not the pressure from him. He supported me in anything. But he was so successful. I just wanted to show that I could do that too. And it was very money linked for me. I had to make the most money to prove that I was successful in my mind. And so I think he shared with you, I have an economics degree as well as an English degree. And I went into college at a very competitive college, Lehigh University, where everyone becomes engineers or goes to work at the Big Four and goes into the city afterwards. And so I was always trying to live up to these other people and prove that I could be like my dad, be like my peers. And so I did the economics degree. I hated it. I did it. I did well, but I was never super excited about it. I wasn't meeting with my teachers outside of class. And then I had my English degree that I would kind of only tell people about, or I would present it in a way like, oh, I'm doing that one for fun. That's my fun major. Don't worry, I'm not doing anything with it because you know, the typical thing is you can't do anything with an English degree. And so, you know, that's how I kind of fell on the law school path, because if I wasn't going to go into business, you know, an English degree, a business degree, they're great pre-law. And I loved school. I was really good at it. I loved the idea of like doing more years and being able to read and learn that system. But, you know, that's when my dad said, you need to intern and see if you really like this. And don't waste the time. Don't waste the money just because you want to do more school or say you're a lawyer. You know, that's silly. And so he found this internship for me and I went through the motions and I went to court and I did all the paperwork and I became friends with the colleagues and got to know the ins and outs of lawyer life. And it wasn't for me. And so what my dad does in this book is walk people through, what are your real passions? What do you really want to do? He always said to my siblings and I that if you do what you love to do, you know, you never work a day in your life. And that's the secret to success. So I was tutoring on the side. I would volunteer at the local schools. I was always the kid who got the cousins together and all the little kids and, you know, helped people with their homework. That was just me. I loved interacting. I loved teaching. I loved being on my feet, putting a lesson together. And so, you know, I got my master's in education and I took that route and I haven't looked back since, but there was a lot of times where those external pressures of proving, you know, the reputation of a teacher is sometimes those who can't do teach, and trying to like get over that reputation and just come to terms with it within myself was a really long process, especially when you have a dad with this rags to riches story who built a company and has this great place for you to go in a different direction was hard. Two of my siblings are in the industry with my dad. And then my third sibling, who's a speech therapist, her husband's in the business. So I'm like that, I'm that black sheep. So
again, the way you come across, you're not the black sheep, because I think, especially talking to your dad, that's the importance of respecting the path that is yours, not someone else's. Your dad was so proud. And obviously that's why I wanted to do this book, but also I can't hit home enough, because we did this with Gene, just the importance that you said, you know what? And because a lot of parents wouldn't do that. I told the story of my best friend. His grandfather was a big influence in his life. And right when we finished college in May, he said, I got you to start at this, I forget which law school it was, but it was a really good one. I can get you in August. And he said, whoa, let me intern first. And he interned and he hated it. And the type of corporate law, the people he's working with, who he got along with, said, don't do this. You're not going to like it. And now he builds some of the highest end commercial developments in New York City. He was a builder like you. He hated it. He wanted to be out building and doing things. I mean, to be a corporate lawyer would have been such a tragedy, which the same way where you could have listened to what you thought your peers wanted or keeping up with this Jones's career. But I would imagine, do you think you'd be about 10 times more miserable?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
You probably wouldn't have time to be balance being a mother and what you love. So that's always plays into that.
It would be hard. So I teach, I'm a high school English teacher, and I actually, through writing this book, and we can talk about it this a little bit, but totally changed. I didn't change my career, but I left a job I had been at that was super secure and had been at for almost 10 years and had all these benefits. But through writing this book, it made me reevaluate how happy am I really? And I picked up and switched. And now I'm working at a private college preparatory boarding school. And it's interesting, especially with this type of student, right? It's college prep. You're definitely going on to do bigger and better things. And those pressures are still so prevalent. And I try to tell my students, like, they know what they're going to be, but I put no in air quotes because they know what they're going to be based upon what society is telling them, what their parents are telling them, what they think they're supposed to do. And those are usually things like lawyers, finance, you know, engineering, becoming a doctor. Yeah. And so, but then I see them do these beautiful things on the stage. They put on these amazing productions or make these beautiful costumes for people or make these beautiful pieces in wood shop or, you know, talk about how much they love to make a video game and post on YouTube what they're playing and how they achieve it. And so they have all these other passions that they light up when they talk about, but a lot of times they don't feel the confidence to pursue those. And so I spend a lot of my time teaching, saying, you know, who are you really? What do you believe in? What do you want to do? What makes you happy? And it's okay to follow that as well. The world needs every type of person. And not everyone. Obviously, I'm at a college prep school now, so they're supposed to go on to college. But especially when I was in public school, you know, not everyone needs to go to college. And I think that's a huge stigma that we need to get over. The world needs people to learn trades. And, you know, we need people to do, you know, just every day, you know, help create beautiful lawns and gardens and preserve our forests. And we need everything.
Absolutely. We had a foster son who was so into machinery and garbage trucks. Like, I just hope he grows up to be the happiest garbage man ever because he so was into it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, you reference a lot of like the values that were modeled to you, that you really, you wanted, were striving for these things because of what you saw your dad do and because of those values. How, out of four siblings, would you say, did you all follow those values that were modeled for you?
So what's interesting, if you were to meet all four of us, you would think that we are all from different families. Like at first glance, you would be like, wow, they're related. But then if you really sit and get to know us, we have very similar values and foundations. So even though our interests, our hobbies, the type of people we are, you know, I was the goody two shoes, straight A student. My brother was the one who was on student council and running things. I have one sister who was like the drama nerd and in theater, another sister who was like working from the day she could, counting her money and collecting everything. Like, we're very different types of people. But if you were to ask us what we care about and what makes us tick and what gets us excited, you know, it, beyond the job, it's the connection with people. So we all work in roles. We're making a difference where we're talking to people, we're interpersonal, we're making time for our families. That's really important to us, finding time to have balance and to also support our individual passions and pursuits. And those were all things that our parents instilled in us at a very young age.
That's awesome. What I hear you saying a lot of, there was lots of values expressed and not a lot of pressure. Like, your parents, you know, and we spoke with Jean at great length, you know, had very specific demonstrated values, but they didn't put a lot of parental pressure. They may have encouraged you or reminded you or guided you, but it seems as though you were very free to choose what your path is. Tell us a little bit about the way that you just expressed how everyone was different really showed me. I drew a little diagram, parental values over parental pressure. And the difference that those two perspectives offer and how it really made you into who you are.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you look at the four of us, I'm probably the one who cared most about what they thought. And people would come to me and probably think my parents put so much pressure on me. But I would go home to them and be like, I got a C on this test. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm not good enough. And they would look at me and be like, did you try hard? Did you learn something? Like, you're good. You know, like, I needed, it was me putting the pressure on myself. But my parents let us explore everything and anything. You know, I played, we all tried music. My brother was a super athlete, but on the weekends we were seeing plays and it wasn't my dad's thing, but he pretended to like it to show us that, you know, it's important to be well-rounded. And really, they just listen. One of the best things about my dad is he knew nothing about volleyball, and that became my sport. He's like a super basketball person, like at every game for anyone in the family who plays. He was coaching our teams. That was his passion. When I chose volleyball, he got so into it. He learned every rule that he could. He was out back with me, like spiking the ball so I could practice digging. You know, we'd go to a tournament and he'd scout the other teams and come back and tell us little tips and tricks. And it's not his thing, but you would think it was his thing because since it was my thing, he made it his thing. And so I think that's the most important thing about parenting that I hope to take to my son, is that if something's important to you, it's going to be important to me. And that's how you feel seen and supported, I think, and feel like you're able to follow your own path.
That's powerful.
That's huge.
I remember reading in, it might've been a Stephen Covey book or one of them, about this along these lines. And the story was, this guy for his son's 16th birthday took him around to one summer to a bunch of the Major League Baseball stadiums, like some of the coolest ones. They went on this big trip to the Major League Baseball stadiums. And his coworker, he took off all this time and he went and did it. And he came back, his coworker said, "Gosh, do you like baseball that much?" He said, "Oh, no, I like my son that much." And the story was, his son was so passionate about baseball stadiums and what it did. And I think the son went into some sort of sports involvement from that. But I'll never forget that. He said, "Oh, no, I don't love baseball. That's my son," which is kind of the same thing. So it kind of meshed it together. It started as something different, but he said he enjoyed the trip and would have never taken it. So,
yeah. And that's so sweet. And I think it's like a give and take when you have parents that do that for you. Like, I can't tell you how many times my dad listened to me play the clarinet and it was probably awful, but you would have thought I was like Beethoven or something. But when you do that, it's this give and take, because then I did want to learn his hobbies. Like, I didn't become everything that he was or wanted, but he loved to read. And then I'd want to sit with him and we'd talk about books. And, you know, now I'm an English teacher. And so it's not that he pushed those things on me, but there was this give and take that you grow from, because he's valuing you. And then you see him as a real person that you then want to learn from.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very powerful.
That is powerful. And I wonder too, along these same lines, how do you decipher, because I know this is kind of where something that you added into the book as well, like finding your inner voice. How do you separate the parental voice from your inner voice?
So that's a really good question, because I think the one thing I struggle with the most, and I don't know if this is like a millennial thing. I worry a lot about Gen Z and Gen Alpha, just because at least millennials, we still had a childhood without technology and social media, like infiltrating everything. That came a little later. But I think even with that influence, I'm someone who has a lot of external markers of success rather than my own internal voice. And that's something that I am like openly working on all the time, that I need an internal compass. I need to trust myself rather than look for either pretending I have the perfect life and editing everything and putting it on social media, or just going by what society thinks I should be. I'm really working on what is that internal voice that isn't my parents, isn't someone else's. And I think what's great about the book is I'm just open about that. You are going from a graduate to a grown-up. Adulting is really freaking hard, and I'm in the middle of it, and I am doing this too. And all of the pitfalls and struggles, you know, I'm having. So if you don't have your own internal voice, let's find it together. And, you know, you're getting this wisdom from someone who has lived so much life, done so many amazing things. You know, I kind of come in to say, hey, we're at the beginning of this. We're not there yet, but let's get there together. And so we do a lot of reflecting in the book. We ask our readers to sit down and ask themselves certain questions. The first and last sections of the book, the first one's about life, the last section's about health and relationships. They're more of the reflective chapters where we really try to get at who are you, you know, what makes you feel passionate, what lights you up, what gets you excited, how do you find balance? And so that's where we do the reflecting. And then in the middle are these really like straightforward sections about how to move up in your career, how to get that job once you figure out what you want, how to start saving and be financially stable. So I'll be the first to admit that I don't really know how to answer your question well, Jamie, because I'm still working on that.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I appreciate the honesty.
Yeah. And I even think for our listeners, I wrote it down too, you know, as a discussion to have with our 18-year-old and 16-year-old too, the internal compass, just the idea of start that conversation. Like, do you have one? What is it? How does it, what does it sound like when it talks to you? What does it feel like? Where, when has it shown up and when has it failed you, you know, and what things in your life add to it or take away from it? Mm-hmm. I just think that's an incredible concept that I've not really thought much about. And we have a graduate in the house. So
yeah, sitting with yourself is really hard. And that's what I'm learning to do a lot of. And my dad meditates a lot. And it's funny because I actually turned him onto meditation and then he ran with it and he meditates every day. And I stopped the practice. I loved it, but life got away from me and I'm trying to find my way back to it. But sitting with yourself is a really hard thing to do. I love that where I'm teaching now, it's a Quaker school. Do you know anything about Quaker schools? Yeah.
No electronics.
Tell us about it. Give a quick review because I don't, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't.
Yeah. So Quaker schools, I mean, they're really popular on the East Coast because that's like William Penn from Pennsylvania was a Quaker. And so we have a lot of schools in Pennsylvania that are Quaker schools, but basically they just believe in like the light of God or spirit is within every individual. And so bringing out that light in each person is really the goal of this education. It's also about, there's not a lot of parameters around things. So free play for children's really important. My son's in their daycare and they go outside every day, no matter the weather, snow, rain, right? Like it's really important that you explore on your own. Learning's very inquiry based. And at least twice a week, students are doing what's called meeting for worship, where they have to sit in silence, no electronics for 30 minutes. And it usually opens with a prompt of some sort. And so I'm there. I have to walk the walk. And I had to sit in silence for 30 minutes the first time. And it was the hardest thing I had done in so long. And I realized, you know, if you can't sit with yourself for 30 minutes, if that's scary for you, it was actually very anxiety provoking, like having to confront what my real thoughts are, where I'm at in my life. Because as a young mom, and a working mom, you're constantly busy. You don't have to do that. And it gets easier as you go. But I just realized, you know, we don't, I think, in our world today, know how to sit with ourselves and face ourselves enough.
No.
It's difficult, especially with constant stimulation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, that's going to be one of the best lessons those kids take forward. Because as you said, I think there's really grounded adults who still can't do that one thing. But I found when you take the time to do it, certain things unveil. And that's where real direction starts to come from.
It's impressive. I love that they do this. And you feel it then on your campus, like those values, they infiltrate everything. You walk everywhere. People are saying hi to each other. You don't get that a lot, no matter who you are, who you're passing. You're saying hello. You're asking about their day. You're engaging and facing tough issues because you know that you're resilient and you get through them. And, you know, that comes into everyday learning.
Absolutely. I'll tell you the biggest compliment that we've had for our two oldest sons. And I think it's because we allow tech time, but we also do something called tech fasting, where there's certain times we're not on the phones, you know, so we're not giving it up, but we have unavailability to technology. And I mean, just in the last few weeks, friends or business friends that have come and been in the local area and we've met up, they've said, wow, both your sons looked us in the eye and shook our hands and actually looked us in the eye. And that is being lost, not even because of lack of confidence, just because of getting used to just present. Always looking down. They're not present and they're looking down. And I said, okay, we're doing something right there. But you see,
have to make sure to keep doing it with the other ones too, you know?
Yeah. It becomes your security blanket when you can look down and you don't have to do the hard things. Like human connection, I think, has become really hard for our younger generations. And that's why I think my dad's advice is really goes to every work, any career you choose, because it's all about connecting with yourself and connecting with others. No matter what career you choose, if you can connect with someone, they know who you are, they know your feelings, they know your heart, you know, you're going to grow in that career. People are going to want to hire you. He really talks about those personal skills that we're losing, how to be able to get on the phone, how to talk to someone who wants to hire you, how to just bring it back to basics and connect.
Yeah, it was great. Well, we already talked about it last episode, but tell people where they can find the book. And that it was a great question we asked your dad, but it's always our finale question that I want to get from the co-author, because I know it'll be completely different. But tell people where they can find the book and information on you guys' account.
Absolutely. So gradsatgrownup.com is our website. And then we also have a Facebook and an Instagram, Grad to Grown Up Instagram account. And my dad, Gene Rice, on his LinkedIn has been posting a lot of tips. But we actually have now some free giveaways on the website where you can get interview tips and career advice that you can download. So definitely go to our website for that. And yeah, we hope the book comes out April 12th. So you can pre-order it on Amazon now or Barnes and Noble, but we just can't wait for you to all see it. And then we can connect with you hopefully from there and start some really great conversations.
That's awesome. Good. I want to make one point real quick before we move on, because I made some good notes, but what I wanted to mention too is talk about our teens, or, you know, that eye contact and how important it is. But something that we don't think about is when we're on our phones and our children are talking to us, it's not just our children on their devices, but it's also us on ours.
You're right.
And if they're speaking to us and we don't look up to look them in the eyes, it's very difficult for them to remember to do the same thing.
We're training them to do just what we're not wanting to see.
And so I do see that a lot when, and so I just figured it was worth mentioning because you have a little one too. We've got them ranging all ages. And that's one thing that I remind myself, like, if I'm here and they're asking a question, like, okay, stop, look them in the eyes. Cause that's so important. It is a dying skill, right?
It's so hard. Our son is really struggling now to, when you turn off a screen, he gets very upset. And we like that decompression time when we all get home so that we can cook. We realize it's not getting good. It's not good for him, but the hypocrisy, like you're pointing out, my husband was on his phone doing a work email and he was like, all right, screens off, turns off, you know, Ben's show, but he's on his phone answering the work email. And then Ben runs over to him and kind of like grabs the phone and wants to look at it. You know, they know everything that we're doing. So it's really hard to walk the walk, but you have to do it. And that's why I love being a mom. They make us better because, you know, we're held accountable to be better people for them.
We always finale one of our interviews with the 75-year-old self. It's a question we started asking because everyone will say, you know, would you tell your 21-year-old self? And that's good. It's enlightening. But we looked the opposite direction in the pandemic for bigger wisdom and said, what would our 75-year-old self likely say to us right now? So I'd love to ask you that question. You know, what do you think, you know, we're talking years down the road, your 75-year-old self would tell you, the advice they give others?
That's a good one. I mean, you can double my age right now and I'm still not 75. So I have a lot of growing and evolving to do, but just a little bit what we were talking about, what I'm personally working on, finding that inner compass. I really hope at 75, I can look back at my younger self or someone younger and just say, you know, stop trying to do everything and be everything so that you can finally just be that one thing you need to be, which is your true authentic self. Just stop chasing and settle. And then you have it all figured out. And I think I'm really hoping that at 75, I can know that and live that. And I'm really working on getting there.
We all are.
Awesome. Well, Thank you.
Courtney. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. We will look forward to seeing your dad again. And we'll also look forward to the book coming out.
Absolutely. Good luck with your little one coming.
Thank you. Thanks so much for being here.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.